friend.
Hey.
How you feeling today?
I'm great.
Me
How are you?
Too. I'm feeling really, really good and excited for today's episode.
Same. I'm excited to learn from you.
Well, I think this is a conversation.
Sexy professor.
Thank you. It's the new bifocals that are giving me
the
this.
The lingerie professor.
The OnlyFans professor. So I think this topic is something that people who know me and my platform, politics and fashion, have probably heard me talk about before, but today I thought that it also needed to be brought to the justice stage.
And we've started this conversation.
We have.
Around the soft life.
Around the soft life, for sure. And so today is going to be about luxury and how we define it and what it means to welcome luxuries into your life at a big age. And so first though, I like these kind of get to know you segments of our episodes because we don't know what the other person is going to say. What's the favorite place that you travel?
I need more clarification. So for what purpose?
See, this is the professor in you coming out. If for any reason, Margot, the universe is open.
This is really hard. Because I really love traveling so much.
And, I know you do.
I'd probably say Spain.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because that was the first place I really traveled, and it was the first place I traveled alone.
Well, tell us about that. It's when you were a
student.
High
school.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did an exchange year in Barcelona when I was 16. And so it was life-changing. And, you know, we go back to Spain as much as we can. I've taught there, and we're going to go at some point. And so mm-hmm. I think if I had to choose a place that has all the things,
yeah,
it would be Spain. But then if you were to ask, like, what's your favorite place to go for food, I would say Italy. Or what's your favorite place to go for, like, the beach?
Okay.
I would say another place. Or what's your favorite place to go for spa? And I would say that crazy spa you took me to in Tulum, right? So
that, where the lady put the egg over your body and then she cracked it and released all the toxins out of your body.
And she also smashed Josh and I with oregano leaves.
Yeah, and she told me how to take a spiritual dip at 6 a.m., and we got to the ocean at 6:30, and I don't think my spiritual dip was effective.
No, we didn't. No, okay. You're making that up. I got you up at 5:45.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I agree with, like, categorizing
okay, so what's
it.
Your
That's
favorite
great.
Place? I think I know what you're going to say.
It depends. So, in the U.S., my favorite...
Sure, you just told me I couldn't do that.
Well, you gave five places, okay, so now the rules have changed. In the U.S., this is going to sound trite, but it's very true. It is Miami.
Obviously.
Anywhere in South Florida. I feel like that's my vibe. I'm from Florida. I feel like South Florida is a completely different, like, part of the state. It could be a state of its own. So when I think about living my best life in this country, because most of it is ghetto, it would probably be somewhere in South Florida, close to my family.
Even in the summer?
I don't mind it because I grew up with that kind of heat, so I don't mind it. If we're going to Europe, Lisbon, Portugal, period.
I've never been.
Oh, girl, it's a vibe. And what I realized about Portugal is that it is much more affordable than other parts of Europe. I mean, I spent $2 for a beer. The luxury shopping is amazing. The climate is beautiful. It's a great place. And other places that I think are amazing, I would have to say Tulum. I think it's idyllic, honestly, especially if you get away from kind of like the main tourist corridor.
I'm down. I love a good day party.
We will tell y'all one day about our experience at the day party spot and what that was like for both Margot and Josh.
No,
stay tuned.
I really liked it. I'm glad my husband came back alive.
But we taught him how to swag surf.
We did.
And that was a lot of fun.
And he was there. Our sponsor today.
Our sponsor today is the Justice League.
Guys, really. We're not just like pitching it because we want to make money.
Yeah, I mean, it's not.
It's not lucrative. We're pitching it because we think it is actually going to be an incredible addition to the podcast and the community that we're really seeing building as we do these live events. It's just incredible.
Absolutely. And the energy is just infectious. And we don't want to cap it. We want to just keep it flowing. And I think a virtual or an online community is the place for that to happen. So hop over to Mighty Networks. We will make sure that we have the link in the description box and in the show notes. You will receive exclusive content in the private community. For example, bonus episodes, live chat chats and discussions with Margot and I, also book clubs or film discussions. I mean, it's going to be a whole wealth of information and resources that are there just for you.
Let's get to one of our many favorite parts of our episodes, which is dumb shit people say. And we've expanded beyond men because, you know, it doesn't take men to push forward misogyny. And in this case, our quote is from a woman.
It is. It is presidential candidate Nikki Haley.
Second time presidential candidate Nikki Haley.
Who on the campaign trail recently said, "How are we supposed to get our girls used to the fact that biological boys are in their locker rooms? And then they wonder why a third of our teenage girls seriously contemplated suicide last year." Margot, your thoughts?
I promise you that that statistic around teen mental health, which is a statistic that is real and very, very damning about the state of our society and how we treat young girls and women and the support we have, has nothing to do about the very few children who are born biologically male who are transitioning to female.
Period.
There are two things that have nothing to do with one another.
At all.
We know what the data says, that child mental health is at an all-time low, that we know that the proliferation of technology and social media has aided and increased those numbers, social isolation as a result of COVID, the dilapidated and underperforming public education system that we have, the lack of robust after-school resources, the lack of community resources, the lack of mental health resources. The list goes: housing instability, financial instability, the economic downturn, people losing their jobs. Wait, the list goes on and on. Has nothing to do with the very, very few children that make the very difficult decision to transition. No one's just making that decision haphazardly. What do you say?
And sometimes the children are not even actively transitioning as far as reassignment is concerned, right?
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said transitioning.
No. I think that's perfect because it is multiple forms, right? How we identify based upon our gender identity and presentation can take multiple forms. I think there are two things here. Number one, this conflation that it's downright dangerous. And as you said, for all those reasons, it's just absolutely not freaking true. But number two, when we talk about teenage girls who are facing those high rates of suicidal ideation, depression, anxiety, et cetera, that the CDC report came out with, many of those girls are queer. Many of those girls are non-binary, or they might be gender expansive young people. So they are also being harmed by the bathroom bans, by the don't say gay bills, by the homophobic, for example, legislation.
Yes.
Like, we're talking about the same population often. But for her, girls are only cisgender. Girls are only straight. As if nothing else exists along the spectrum.
And that the only thing that's impacting their mental health is the, like, 2 seconds they change in a locker room.
And this gets back to another pervasive stereotype that burns my biscuits, which is that queer people are sexually
predators.
Like, predators. We are out to, you know, God forbid, sexually assault children, or in this case, their peers. That is simply not true. Even if these were children of different genders, let's say they are, you know, for the sake of this argument, they are both straight, both cisgender, it does not mean that they are going to prey upon the girls who are in the establishment. There are many ways, as far as just adult supervision, that we can prevent that.
I'm so confused because the data is so clear that the vast majority of people who are sexual predators are male.
Yep.
Cis hetero men preying on women and young girls. That's what the data supports. Now, data is expansive, right? So data doesn't encompass every single person.
Yeah.
But what we should be worried about is cis boys sneaking into the girls' bathroom. Not trans girls changing for gym.
Yeah, who, as you mentioned, have shown such strength and bravery to even be able to go to school and have their full identity and who they are, their full being on display.
And you know what would be dangerous? For them to change in the boys' bathroom.
Absolutely.
I should have said that.
Well, but I also think that these people who are spewing this rhetoric don't care about those kids. They don't actually care about kids at all. Because if they did, these larger societal issues that you just talked about would be part of their plan. But instead, what Nikki Haley is doing is spewing this rhetoric that is quite honestly violent, because it puts trans, non-binary, gender expansive kids at in a very precarious situation.
Where they're always having to defend their identity.
Always. Always. And that is a form of violence. It really is. The last thing I want to say is that I highly recommend people hop over to Human Rights Campaign. They're doing a lot of work around this. And it was actually something that I heard the executive director say recently, which is that, number one, 70% of Americans actually have no problem with the LGBTQ population as far as how they identify their views and their value system. So that's number one. So when Nikki Haley says this shit and other MAGA politicians, what they're trying to do, as we've talked about before, is rile up this very small, actually, extremist base.
Who vote.
And so from a political science perspective, it actually is strategic, but it does not at all represent the majority of the country. So that's number one. Number two, these don't say gay bills are the same types of legislation and policies that are being enacted by folks who are also promoting this stop woke culture, the anti-critical race theory legislation. This is a package of hate that people are taking around to different states and promoting and shopping this set of bills.
Tashira, can I just say something that's probably pretty basic?
So basic.
But it's something that I've thought about a lot, and I think people with small people in their life can really resonate with, but also just people in general. If you don't like Brussels sprouts, even those yummy roasted ones, and I say, no, they're amazing. You're going to love them. And you just don't like the taste. You don't like the texture, boiled, grilled, charred, whatever. They're not your thing. You're not going to like them.
Mm-hmm.
So me saying that or eating them in front of you is not going to make you a lover of Brussels sprouts.
Never.
The same is true for being queer.
Period.
If you're not queer, you're not queer.
It is this idea.
Is that the right way to say it?
Absolutely. It's this idea of the gay agenda, the indoctrination that is
occurring.
If
that's something that isn't in you, is not part of you, spending time or being exposed to it isn't going to make a child different.
But here's what I do think is true, and I don't have data to support this, but here's what I do think is true. Widening the narrative and being more inclusive as a society does give young people the language that they need to identify earlier. So there
Absolutely.
Are so many young people in my life who, at the age of 7, 8, 9, 10, preteens, early teens, who are saying, I am bisexual, I am queer, I am trans, etc. And that was not true 20 years ago. It was not true.
But we didn't have 30
years ago. But we did it. It doesn't mean that people were not trans 30 years ago. It just means we didn't have the fucking language to describe it. It does not mean that my trans brother has been indoctrinated by a trans agenda. It means that now he has the language to say, I am trans, and wouldn't we want that? Because we know the high rate of suicidal ideations for trans children. Again, these people don't care about kids. And that's that on that.
Okay. So let's get to our episode. I'm really excited to learn from you about this, because it's something that I've already learned a lot from you. This is a continuation from our conversation last season about the soft life.
For sure.
And so what's luxury to you?
What's the what? So before I answer what luxury is to me, I just want to situate this conversation for some people around quiet luxury in particular. Mm. Because if you are not on TikTok, then you may not know that this has been a very loud conversation around many members of Gen Z, people of color at that, who are saying that quiet luxury is better than so-called loud luxury. And they are hailing certain things like Succession, the clothing that the families wear on that show as being very quiet and a better establishment or a show of wealth, being that old money is better than new money, for example. And they're calling loud luxury, luxury that may be very logo driven, right? It may be like the Gator Boots, the pimped out Gucci suits, like where you're really showing up and you Gucci down to the socks, you're wearing the LV everywhere. That type of thing. And so they have all of these TikTok videos where they're saying, this is the standard that we should live by. This is bullshit. You're basic. You are ghetto, etc. if you wear your luxury clothing in this way. And so I had a conversation over on YouTube about it. And the video is still circulating widely because, in my opinion, it is classist, elitist, and quite honestly, racist. And what it begs is a bigger conversation about what luxury is, which is why I thought that today's conversation should surround that topic, because I think that it changes depending on things like our age, of course, our family dynamics, maybe even our geographical location, but also our access to disposable income. So I like to say this definition by Lisa Nichols, who's a motivational speaker, surprisingly not Gabby Bernstein, but someone also who's had a profound effect on my life, who...
Lisa Nichols, never heard of her.
Well, get
I'm sure.
Get hip, friend, because she said that luxury is privileged circumstances.
Oof.
And I think about that a lot, right? It is the privilege to do a number of things, to be in a circumstance to where you can make a choice that benefits you. And for me, that can basically kind of transcend any environment. It's not about material things. It could be, these are the best microphones that have ever existed. That's a luxury. It's the best lipstick, face serum, the best spa, the best whatever. It can be any number of things. But what about you?
I think, I mean, that resonates for me as well. I think of a lot of things that are luxury that I aspire to do that actually have nothing to do with luxury goods.
Like what?
Like spa services that I would like to try someday, or vacations, or... experiences.
Yeah.
Food, restaurants.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
Retreats. And so this is a really interesting conversation for me. Also because I, like how I grew up and where I grew up, quiet luxury. If you had a disposable income, which I didn't, but like if you did, you only aspire to have quiet luxury goods. So I went to high school with a lot of really, really wealthy people.
Okay.
Like, I bet secession was based on the kids I went to high school with.
Oh, wow.
And no one would ever wear anything that said Gucci on it.
This is so this is also what I wanted to get into, because I think what the Gen Z TikTokers jumped into, maybe not knowing, is that there are these experiences that we have had that are based upon class, and class in this country is defined by race largely. Mm-hmm. So tell us more about this kind of old money aesthetic that you saw firsthand.
Well, so I went to a private boarding school in Massachusetts. I was a day student, but, you know, I went to school with a lot of kids from New York, a lot of kids who were children of finance and media moguls, had second homes in the Hamptons, apartments in New York, traveled all the time. I mean, I remember this one boy who I went to high school with, who was from Miami, actually, and his parents just bought an apartment in Boston.
Wow.
He was 14. That he and his friends just would go to.
Wait, what? Oh, it was for him, not for them to come visit.
Well, it was for...
He had the keys.
Correct. Right? So, like, that kind of money. I witnessed it. I saw it. But it was very confusing to me.
Yeah.
And there was never, I mean, I think there was some, like, people knew because of, like, what schools kids had gone to. And, like, if you went to Dalton.
Okay. Never heard of them, but I've seen them on television.
Right. Like, if we're talking secession, it's, like, the schools that they went to in New York, and then they were shipped off to boarding school.
Okay.
That sort of thing. And they all had really expensive stuff and had access to it, but it wasn't monikered.
But why do you think that is? Why is that something that is frowned down upon?
Because it's so,
Yeah, no, tell us. I think, obviously you can't speak for every person that's had this experience.
There's this notion that like being understated is more civilized and more socially appropriate than being ostentatious. Like that being out there about brands or like the it bag.
Yeah.
I mean, I was also in high school, so I don't know, but that's like cheap.
So these things I think still rang true.
I mean, I think they do, given what you've told me about this proliferation of this stuff on TikTok.
And also the comments under my YouTube video, which has almost 100,000 views. So, and I'm not saying that to big up the video. I'm saying that because this conversation is pervasive. People are really into these ideas, which I find so interesting.
Like into them in that they're trying to learn or into them in that they find them problematic?
They find them both. One, because they find them problematic and maybe didn't have the language to describe why they were problematic. But also, there are people who just prefer a minimal aesthetic, and that is fine. And so those people kind of came at me very loudly by saying, I just don't want to wear logos. Why does that make me racist or make me aligned with a racist narrative? And I like to not wear logos too. I also like to wear logos. But Margo, for the most part, I mean, I believe in a capsule wardrobe. I like interchangeable pieces. I'll go there with the loud luxury. But I think if you look in my closet, it's probably more on the other side. And so I'm not saying that it's a problem with minimalism or any of the kids you went to school with or their parents not wanting to wear a logo. My problem is with the deduction that is made from that. The idea that
if you wear logo, you're poor.
You're poor.
Or you're not classy.
You're not classy. When, and this is the other part of the argument for me, yes, you may not be wearing a Gucci t-shirt, but you bought your 14-year-old an apartment. That's not quiet. And that was probably your fifth home. Like, you flew to a destination, a private island on a private jet. That's not quiet. You have two nannies. That's not quiet.
Well, so I think you're bringing up a really good point about this idea of what's socially appropriate and private and what's not. And one of the things that I've thought a lot about is this idea of wealth and privacy being interchangeable because you have the privilege to be private.
Oh, this is good. Come on, break this down. Come on, right. Counselor.
So when you have a lot of money and you have access to things, so I think that the two nanny thing is a good example, right? If you have two nannies, you probably have a big home and multiple children and a lot of money. Mm-hmm. If you have two nannies, maybe you have a second home. Maybe you have access to a driver. Maybe you have access to a chef. I don't know. Having two nannies is a humongous expense.
For sure.
Right. And one that if you are strapped, you're not making. But maybe a lot of people have two nannies in secret. You don't know because you live in this big home.
Yeah.
And so this idea that what happens in your home is private, well, you're not being loud about
braggadocious about it.
Right. You're not bragging about it. It's just what you do at home. But I think there's like a real lack of thoughtfulness there because most people don't have space.
Mm-hmm. To kind of hide these things.
Right. So if your access to luxury is once a year buying yourself, when you get your tax returns, a bag that you've wanted.
Yep.
That's out in the world. It's out. You're out.
Yep.
That is much more visible than a family who's part of a community that just surreptitiously uses a private jet to get to St. Bart's on their February vacation.
So it's interesting. So then the wealth actually has the privilege of secrecy.
Yes.
Oh, this is good.
Think there's a lot. I don't know. That's something that I've been thinking about because there's this idea of like what stays in your home, you keep it to yourself, you don't talk about it, which is, I would say, pervasive in a lot of like WASPy white culture.
Mm.
But it also has a correlation to wealth.
Yeah.
Because when you live in community, you can't hide.
And people are going to see the bins in my... for example, the home that I grew up in, my grandparents' home, they're going to see the new bins in the carport because nobody has a garage in my neighborhood. Like, that's a different level of wealth and class. Park on a carport.
Right. And if you have a huge home with, like, a multiple car garage, no one's going to know if you have four cars or two cars.
Or the Aston Martin, the Bugatti, the thing, two boats. Like, no one's going to know.
No one's count. So you introduced a term to me. Which, I mean, it's not like a new concept, but a term that I hadn't used is like, why are people counting my coins?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that happens kind of everywhere.
Yeah.
But I think it's harder to do when a lot of it's happening in secret.
So there's a part of this, too, that sounds like it's driven by how other people see us. And that there may be times that we don't do the thing because we don't want to be perceived a certain way or vice versa.
Yes. And... like, what I would say is if you want the bag, buy the bag.
Period.
But what you see, and I don't know if this is consistent with what you see, like, when you go home in the communities that you move through, is that different communities often look very similar and have very similar things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? For sure.
So some things are socially acceptable in one suburb that might not be in another versus another. And this idea that people are watching you.
Mm-hmm. People are watching you in that there's always some kind of comparison that is happening. And I think that's true whether you're going down to the country club or you chilling on the corner on the block, right?
I think that's true. Yeah. I think that
there's some level of it. And I actually think also the way that you show your wealth is a signal of, and we've said this, but the point is coming to me a bit more clearly, of how we separate each other among class lines, right? And so this hidden wealth is one way, and then wealthy people understand that I don't have as much money because I'm not displaying my wealth in the way that they do.
Or I'm doing it better.
If I'm doing it better, then I really got money. If I'm doing it bad, then she ain't got no money, right? So... If I pull up to the function and I am literally wearing my logos or I have a branded bag, okay, she's not really wealthy. But if I pull up and I have a particular aesthetic, she might really have money. And I feel like that is a comparison and a dance that is done quite often. I actually had this conversation with a friend. She is first generation Chinese American. And she talked about how when she would be out with her mother growing up, her mother would take the time to point out all of these quiet luxury things. Oh, well, that's an Audemars Piguet watch, or that is a Bottega Veneta bag, or that's the thing. They have real money. But then the person who was carrying the Louis Vuitton bag, they don't have any money. Meanwhile, they were poor. But this was an indoctrination that her mother had brought with her that she was then passing down to her daughter.
Interesting. So here's like another aspect of all of this, which is maybe it's not kind of relevant to this conversation, but I think it might be this kind of idea or expectation that everyone wants a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Come on, preach this.
And if you do, fine, that's fine. And if you want the bag and you spend the money on the bag, that's fine. I happen to like the bag. But this kind of alternative, which is also incredibly valid, that there are a lot of people who just don't care.
That do not care.
And maybe they have money and maybe they don't. But that we place all this value on presentation and money related to morality and doing it right that has no basis in anything other than your own views about someone else's life.
It's so subjective and biased and classist and elitist and racist oftentimes. And I would say, so I grew up with people who would say things like, well, the reason so-and-so live in the hood and in public housing is because they always buying their child Jordans. And it's like, that's not why someone is poor, because they bought their child a pair of fucking sneakers. Get out of here. And just because you're poor does not mean that your child does not deserve to have a pair of sneakers. And so there's all this judgment and condemnation around how people spend their money, particularly poor people, But that expectation does not translate to wealthy people.
No.
Because I'm not saying to you, you should be giving away X amount of your salary for reparations reasons. I'm not asking you to see your tax returns to see what you donated to.
I'm not asking you not to get a weekly manicure. That's one that really, can I say burns my biscuit?
It burns your biscuits, girls, to be in your bonnet.
That one in particular, when people criticize poor women about self-presentation, and they're like, well, they spent $100 on their nails. And it's like, when was the last time you didn't get your nails done?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they didn't, but like, there are a lot of people that have body upkeep stuff. When was the last time you didn't work with your trainer or didn't go to your
self-care
class?
Self-care practices, generally. Yeah. Private Pilates classes.
It's like no one's judging you for that.
Mm-mm. But again, it's the thing about what's visible and what's not. I see your hair done. I see your nails done. I didn't know that you had a private Pilates instructor pull up to your house 7 days a week.
By the way, she's not talking about me.
No, I'm not.
Just to kind of confront any narrative that may be developing here.
Yeah, so it is the seen and the unseen, which I think is another lens to look at all of this, which is really profound to me, for sure.
Well, it's also something that you've mentioned. I don't know if you've mentioned it, if we've talked about it on the podcast, but we've talked about it. It's this, and we're going to talk about this more in the private community, but I think it's helpful here around getting work done. And right, that a lot of really wealthy people, plastic surgery work, right? And you were saying that you had read that a lot of celebrities and actors and actresses get a lot of work done, but very subtly over a long time so that no one knows.
Exactly.
So that and they don't even...
It's like, right. It's not any huge changes.
It's subtle.
Changes.
So it's subtle, so therefore good.
Mm-hmm.
Versus someone who like goes to Miami and gets their body done.
Exactly. Gets
and that's
the whole
not
thing.
Good. Again... Like, everyone needs to make the decision that's right for them, but how we place judgment on other people's decisions based on things that are actually related to class is something that we really need to investigate.
So I love that you said that, because I want us to transition to any tips that we have around defining luxury for ourselves at a big age and how we interrogate some of these things, because I would imagine for many people in your community, they may feel bad about buying the bag, right?
A lot. Oh, totally.
So how do we define what this looks like for us, Margo?
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, people need to get to know themselves and what they want, both in their lives and on their bodies.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, one of the things that I'm starting to try to incorporate into my own practices is buying myself or providing for myself a birthday present. So both a birthday present every year and every time I have a surgery, I get myself something.
Oh, I love this, friend.
And so every time I had a surgery last year, I bought myself something very special that I use all the time.
Yeah.
And so that's a practice that I've incorporated. And, you know, I've been taking for the last 2 years. For the last 3 years, I took a trip on my birthday.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So for me, that's luxury. I've never done that. I've never done that for myself. I never let myself do anything like that. And what about for you?
Well, let me just say, I want to go back to taking a trip. Margo's taking a trip as a wife, a mother, and a working professional. So often, I think those are three things that would convince people at a big age they don't deserve to take a solo trip. And so kudos to you for busting through that narrative and saying, no, I need this for me, and recognizing it as a very valuable luxury in your
life.
Thank
you. Yeah, no, it's been each time. I mean, I don't mean to get too woo-woo, but hey, each time it's been transformative. And I've been able to make really big and small shifts in my life that are really hard to make in my day-to-day. That's a luxury for me.
Yeah.
That's space away from my life. A life that I love and cherish more than anything in the world is really important. The space from it. For me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alone.
I think defining luxury at a big age is, to your point, defining what makes you feel good. And when you have the capacity, the resources, pouring into that thing. So for me, it's family. And I've been away from my family for a very, very long time. I came to the D.C. Metro in 2007. I am the only close family member that's this far away from home. And I realized on my birthday this year, I was like, well, I don't need a thing. Whenever I want the thing, I usually get the thing. So what would I want? And I realized that I wanted to spend time with my sisters. And I want to do it without their kids, because I love them. But leave your kids at home sometime. You deserve to have the solo trip. And so I bought them plane tickets to come to D.C. I want to turn up with my sisters. This was our first trip, just the three of us ever. And I'm 41 years old. And that's a memory that will never fade, right?
That's so beautiful.
Thank you. But it's also a luxury I realize to give. I am so blessed to be able to give to people in my life who I know personally. And so that's a luxury that I love, because it makes me feel good. In many ways, it's actually selfish to give, right? It makes me feel good. And I also realized, as we talked about during the Soft Life episode, that I have the things, many of the things. No one had to tell me to buy the bag. I was buying the damn bag.
And you still buy the bag.
And I still do.
And, you know, she has a running list, guys, of her wants.
Of my luxury wants, for sure. But that list over the past couple years, Marco, has gotten shorter, because what I recognize is that much of that also comes from a scarcity mindset for me. And so once I was able to really have everything on the list, I didn't even want that shit no more. I was like, actually, the luxury for me right now is great bedding. The luxury for me right now is transforming my balcony so I can sit outside and work all day, right? These things begin to change over time.
I also think there's luxury, and this is coming from someone who's really impatient. I'm a very impatient person. Like, I make a decision, I want it. All my friends and family, it's like, oh boy, Margo made a decision. Like, they're moving, you know? But there is great value and luxury in waiting. And so one of the things that I talk to my girls about a lot when they want something, like physical.
I love this.
Is, and in my mind, it's like, it's not underpants or socks or something that they like.
For sure.
You know, is, okay, let's see if you're still thinking about it next week. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need to like get it right now.
Yeah.
And that's why I really like your list. And it's why I like my commemoration list, right? It's like, no, you don't just like go whenever you want. And like, were we on the podcast when you talked about buying the David Yurman bracelets?
This was the live taping. Yeah.
Oh, I just
got off the train and bought two David Yurman bracelets.
Without being intentional about it.
Exactly.
There's something very powerful about thinking about a purchase, budgeting for a purchase, saving for a purchase. If you're talking about a physical item.
For sure.
Thinking about the color you want. Thinking about the style. Thinking about the size. What are you going to wear it to? How are you going to style it?
Yeah.
And then buying it.
Like you did with your David Yurman, with your Bottega bag.
Mm-hmm. I thought about it for 2 years.
Exactly.
Not like every day, but
you
it was
wanted
something
to be
that
conscious.
I had my eye on.
And so this brings me to, I think, the last point I would want to make is that if you have all the things, is it still luxury? I think by definition, it's those privileged circumstances. And so I enjoy certain amount of, I don't want to say deprivation, but delaying the gratification, because then it makes the thing, the experience, much more special and significant.
So I know we're maybe a little short on time, but
please.
I would also say that, and this is something we haven't specifically said, is that what's luxury for us might not be luxury for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And that when you guys are seeing things online or celebrities or influencers or whoever who have all of the, like all of the Birkin bags.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not luxury for them anymore.
Absolutely.
Right? It's sad.
Yeah.
It's not special.
And it doesn't mean that you need a Birkin bag either, right? I think that for Black women especially, we have some internalized hatred or massage noir, because we can be our own worst critics intracommunally about other Black women having the thing. And I've heard Candace Brathwaite talk about this. She's a very popular UK content creator. She's a Black woman. And she talked about seeing someone do a new handbag, and she was like, oh my gosh, she just had a handbag last week. How is she doing this unboxing today? And she said she checked herself in that moment, because she was like, if that's how this woman wants to spend her money, if that's the thing, she should have the thing. But also, what makes me upset about the fact that she has it? Is it this idea that I don't deserve it, so she shouldn't have it either? And so I think that interrogation around what luxury is for us is something that we have to consistently do.
And that luxury doesn't have to be a thing.
And it also does not have to be
right,
a thing.
Right, so I think where I, not critical, but where I would encourage people to be more self-inquiring is if you have $2,000, do you want to buy the bag, or do you want to go on a trip?
Yeah.
Or do you want to save it? They're all choices. No, there's no like good or bad. It's just, it doesn't only have to go to the thing.
To one thing, a thing in particular. And the other thing too is that I think savoring the process that it takes to get to whatever it is that we define as luxurious is part of the luxury as well. I once heard Angela Yee, who's a very popular radio host on The Breakfast Club in New York, it's syndicated, but she said that she consistently gives herself something to look forward to. And I think as a woman especially, that is so important, because we are caretakers for so many people in our lives. And so giving ourselves something to look forward to, savoring the experience that we're looking forward to, the time with family, the new handbag, the new car, the great bottle of wine, the new restaurant we're going to go to, looking forward to that and anticipating it is also a luxury.
So can I tell you something that is this hack that has totally changed my life around this? So I used to get so sad, so like depressed after any vacation was over. Like coming home from anything, particularly with family or friends, I would just get so sad. And this has totally changed for me, because now the last few days, even if it's just away with family at their house, right? Like this isn't necessarily like travel, but this has played into some of my travel. So the last few days of any trip, whether it's a road trip, flying somewhere, I plan my next trip.
Oh, I love this.
Or at least we start thinking, I start thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And it makes coming home and back to my life so much sweeter, because there's this, like, I'm so excited to come home, and I'm also going to be, it could be 8 months away.
Yeah.
It could be a year away. But knowing that this isn't over, that I still, and because travel is really important to me, I sometimes think like, oh my gosh, I don't know the next time I'm going to be able to see this person or go to this place or do this thing. And knowing that I have something down the pike really kind of lifts that away.
Yeah, it's funny, because for the first time, I think I received that feeling recently. I am going to Greece with a couple of pretty long layovers, so we're going to get to visit a few countries in October, and we bought the ticket in January. And so I've had this big, huge trip to look forward to for months now. And what it also has done is it has allowed me to figure out what other luxuries I do or I don't want in my life, knowing that I'm preparing for Greece.
No, and it's been interesting actually seeing you incorporate your Greece trip in. Like you've said to me, like, oh, Margot, I really don't want to do that because I'm saving for Greece.
Right.
Or I can't do that because I'll be traveling in October and I don't want to travel in September.
Right.
Right. Or we can't do this event in October because, right. And just having that on your schedule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's such a true point and something that I hope people can take from this conversation today. Margot, it's white toenail season. And I happen to know that your mom loves white toes. And so I want to be intergenerational. I want to bring that in. This year, for the first time, we have a thought emeritus board. And I think that
my mommy should join.
Thought ally emeritus.
Thought ally emeritus. Okay, so multi-generational Lindauer Finberries, allies for life, Thought adjacent.
White
toenails. But you know what? I don't like the
white. You don't like the white toenails.
But I like them on you and I like them on my mom.
Okay, thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.
And friend, just like that, this is the end of season 3. Can you believe it?
No.
I feel like this season has not only flown by, but also I feel like we're in our stride. How do you feel?
Yeah.
I don't run, but maybe this is like what it feels like to have a runner's high.
I feel like we are, and I know it's a good thing because I don't want it to end.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good that it ends because then we can look forward and plan for season 4. And we have some really exciting stuff already kind of percolating.
But just a recap of some of the highlights of season 3. I mean, we had a live event.
Sold out.
In the midst of taping that was sold
magical.
Out.
Magical. Thank you to Bow Market and to Video Garage for making our dreams come true.
We launched the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
We had some very prominent guests on this season as well. So if you have not listened to the full season, this is your reminder to go back and do so.
And to really start thinking about what you want. We touched on so many important things this season: aging, wellness, mm-hmm. time, mm-hmm. luxury, coercive control. I mean, all the things.
So what's next? We would love to hear from you. And also know that between seasons, it doesn't mean that the party stops. We keep things going over in the Justice League in our private community.
Yeah, so if you want more content and you want more episodes, we'll be coming out with a new episode every month that is only available on the Justice League, as well as extra content and private chats around books, movies, and TV shows.
Absolutely. So we'll see you over the Justice League between seasons. But in the meantime, be well, friends.
Be well. I'll see you in the fall.